Hey listeners, before we get to this episode of Problem Solvers, here is a word from our sponsor. Some entrepreneurs are good at starting things. Others are good at scaling things. And if you want to be the latter and be the person to really lead an organization to its maximum potential, then you need to understand how every part of a business works together. That's what the University of Bath is preparing its students for. With its MSc in Entrepreneurship Management and Innovation program, which, by the way, is 100% online, the University of Bath is blurring the lines between traditional business disciplines. It helps entrepreneurs see business as one interconnected whole, and this big picture approach can empower people to reflect upon challenges in new and innovative ways and get beyond established siloed thinking. Because that's how you scale a business. You understand what the market demands, how to deliver it, how to scale it, how to put the right processes in place, and how to make it financially viable, and then you make all of that work together. To gain that big picture perspective, visit online.bath.ac.uk/entrepreneur to find out more about their online MSc Entrepreneurship Management and Innovation course. Again, online.bath.ac.uk/entrepreneur. And now, on with the show. From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. When you think of Genghis Khan, what do you think of? You know, the founder and first great Khan of the Mongol Empire, died in the year 1227. I'm going to guess that you, like I once did, would think of Genghis Khan like this.
Many believe his story is simple, that he was the incarnation of evil, a brutal barbarian who butchered millions.
But Ben Horowitz thinks a little differently. Well, okay, a lot differently.
His kind of defining advantage was he was the master of something we focus a lot on today, which is inclusion.
Inclusion! And we're not just talking about him including a lot of people in his death toll. Genghis Khan, as Ben Horowitz tells it, is a case study in inclusive corporate culture. So, okay, let's get some context here. Ben Horowitz is a name anyone in the tech world knows. He's a co-founder and general partner at the venture capital firm Andreessen Horowitz and author of a new book called What You Do Is Who You Are, How to Create Your Business Culture. And Ben is a guy worth listening to on this subject as he has grown his own successful companies and is now part of investing in and helping to grow some of the greatest disruptors in our world today. And he knows that culture at these companies will propel them to greatness or drag them to the ground. So when Ben sat down to write this book about how to build a great corporate culture, he wanted to start from the pain point. People understand that corporate culture is important, but they don't often understand what creates it or even what they mean when they talk about culture.
People are always talking about, oh, well, you know, that company, look at that bad behavior, this company, look at that bad behavior. But then you get into it, you go, okay, so how do you get good behavior? Like, that's not an easy problem.
So to solve this problem, Ben looks at a number of case studies, but very surprising, often totally strange case studies. And then he extracts the lessons from these stories and draws the line to today's business culture. It's a valuable perspective as entrepreneurs struggle to define their own company's culture. And so today on Problem Solvers, I'm going to offer three brief lessons from Ben. Two are from history, and the third is from Ben himself. Because Ben did not instinctively understand corporate culture at the beginning of his career. Like most people, he stumbled his way into it, and sometimes with disastrous results. So here we go. From Ben Horowitz to Genghis Khan, it is a case study on corporate culture that stretches nearly 800 years, and we'll get into it all right after the break. Paul Frederick has been making dress shirts for over 30 years, and those shirts are pretty darn good. They're also colorful because Paul Frederick believes that adding interesting colors and patterns to your wardrobe can lift your spirits at work. It can make you more confident and more open to engaging the world around you. And so they challenged me to do just that. I'll be honest, I let my wife pick out a shirt that would look good because what do I know? And she went with something that I'd have never thought to pick myself. It was their Easy Care Cotton Buffalo Plaid casual shirt. Lots of color there. Red, white, blue. Whew. But I have to say, it was super comfortable. It's technically a casual shirt, but it still looks really nice. It feels soft. It works tucked or untucked. And yeah, it's nice to show up at work, breaking the routine. People really do notice. So now I've got a little more color in my life, and you can too, because Paul Frederick is giving listeners of Problem Solvers a very colorful deal. Just visit paulfrederick.com/problemsolvers to receive $50 off any shirt. That's paulfrederick.com/problemsolvers to receive $50 off any shirt. And now, our next sponsor. You know what I hate? Hiring. I mean, I should love it. Bringing in fresh ideas and new minds, so great, except actually finding those people can be such a hassle. It takes time to hire, and that's time you don't have when you're growing your business. You need to reach the right candidates at the right time. And that is where LinkedIn comes in. Over 600 million members visit LinkedIn to make connections, learn, and grow as professionals, and to discover new job opportunities. That's how they make sure your job gets posted in front of the people with the right skills, hard skills, and soft skills to meet your role requirements. LinkedIn does the legwork to match you with the most qualified candidates so you can focus on hiring the person who will transform your business. And I especially love how much it costs. You pay only when a candidate views your job post. Tell LinkedIn how much you want to spend, and it'll even give you an estimate of how many applicants you can expect to receive. Yes, with LinkedIn Jobs, you can pay what you want. And the first $50 is on them. Just visit linkedin.com/problemsolvers. Again, that's linkedin.com/problemsolvers to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply. All right, we're back. So I've promised three lessons on corporate culture spanning nearly 800 years packed into one short podcast. That means there is no time to waste, so let's get going. Story number one. What, we can't have some exciting Mongol warrior fight noises for every chapter here? Thank you, BBC documentary I found on YouTube. Okay, chapter one is about Ben Horowitz himself, back when he became CEO of a company called LoudCloud.
I had some management experience before I became CEO, and you know, when you have a small team, you know, they kind of, for better or worse, behave like you behave.
Yeah. They watch the leader, they want to succeed, and so they think the best solution is to just do what the leader does. And that means leadership is fairly straightforward. You can lead by example. Be the model. So that's what Ben did. He led by example, which worked for a while until his company grew bigger.
It turns out that like once you get to a certain scale, lead by example doesn't scale. Like it only scales to the people who actually see you on a very regular basis and how you behave.
So here's a prime example. Ben wanted honesty at work. I mean, who doesn't, right? He thought that if he was honest and he didn't lie, then his employees would also be totally honest and free of lies, which is cool until he has so many people that they're not all actively working with him.
I had a manager who like just lied all the time about everything, about to employees coming in that he hired, to, you know, about the direction that the company was headed in, like that how we were doing, like everything. It was almost like if he didn't tell the story, he would forget what he was saying because, you know, everything was made up. And it just was so shocking to me because I'm like, well, I tell the truth. Like, why wouldn't he tell the truth?
And it got him thinking about why people take certain actions at a company. What determines if someone arrives early or late? What determines if they stay at the Red Roof Inn while they're traveling for work or if they book themselves at the Four Seasons? The answer isn't leading by example. And it's not just giving people a mission statement. It is a broad array of techniques and making decisions at every level of the company that reinforce what the mission is and how everyone can be a part of it.
For example, you know, Amazon, they want to be the low-cost leader in everything. And so a big part of their culture is they don't waste any money, you know, and they have all kinds of cultural cues for that. For example, they used to have this thing where, like, when you come to work at Amazon, you don't get a desk, you get a door with like whatever, a bunch of 2x4s holding it up, because that just shows you like they're not wasting even a nickel. They can make a desk cheaper than they can buy it. That's what at Apple, they would never have that in the culture, because Apple is about a different kind of thing. They're about designing the kind of most beautiful, best, easiest to use products of a certain premium. And so saving costs, you know, these guys spent $5 billion on their campus. That's not something that Amazon would think was a good idea, but for Apple, it is a good idea.
So, all right, let's see how someone can infuse that sensibility into their organization. It is time for chapter two of this corporate culture time travel study. Here's who we're talking about next.
The Toussaint Louverture-led Haitian Revolution is remarkable, but it really is also a cultural statement.
Toussaint Louverture, born into slavery in 1743 on the island now known as Haiti, led a rebellion of the enslaved people, which ultimately liberated the island so that it could become the independent nation of Haiti, and then he served briefly as its first leader. Now, his is a long and complicated history, but Ben zeroes in on something that Toussaint and every company leader today both struggle with, and that is trust. It's hard to build trust among an organization, and Toussaint had an even harder time of it because he was trying to lead a population of enslaved people. And for good reason, this is not a population that has a lot of trust. Their entire lives have been about people violating their trust.
So one of the things that he did is he created this rule that was like exceptionally shocking to them at the time, which is officers in his army were not allowed to cheat on their wives. And this is shocking because everybody was cheating on everybody in those days. In fact, like, you know, pillaging, raping, all that stuff was part of the British army, the French army, the Spanish army, everybody who was deployed on the colony. And so for him running the slave army to go to like this completely other cultural rule, to the extent you'd literally get kicked out of the army if you violated it, was him overemphasizing, look, if I can't trust you to keep that promise, if you can't be trusted on that, you can't be trusted on anything. And if you can't be trusted, I can't use you. So that basically he made trust the fundamental underpinning of everything he did.
It is not an especially fierce war tactic, but it's a level of granular thinking that many leaders don't consider. Think about what this means. This isn't just about cheating on wives or about raping and pillaging. This is about making a display of trust to his soldiers. He's saying, this is how we think and act. We are the morally superior army here, and we will act like it in everything we do. It is infused into every decision and action we take, and that got people's attention. It's like Amazon and those weird non-desks they give people. It's about showing that, yes, this mission of our organization is really infused into everything. It's showing what the prize really is. We're not, in the case of the Haitian Revolution, doing this to rape and pillage. We're doing this for liberty.
If you want liberty, you know, you can't be running around taking people's liberty.
This is the difference between just making a statement of your values and actually enacting them on a granular level. At its best, an organization has logic. You know why decisions are made because they all emanate out of the same worldview. That's something someone can feel a part of. That's something someone can trust because they understand it and can predict it and can carry it forward. All right, Ben goes into a lot more detail about the Haitian Revolution in his book, along with many more lessons from it. But for our purposes, now let's turn to story number three, and it is the one that's been making all this noise. Genghis Khan. So, without turning this into a giant history lesson, here's the thing to know about Genghis Khan. He was nominated to be the supreme leader of the Mongols in the year 1206 at a time when the Mongols were made up of 31 tribes, and these tribes had no peace among them. They were constantly warring with each other. So Genghis Khan realized that if he was going to unite them all, he'd need to give them a common goal, a common purpose. And it couldn't be some abstract thing that soldiers on the ground wouldn't care about, like peace and harmony or whatever. So he told everybody this, work together and we will conquer nations and you will have an endless supply of bounty. The wealth and treasures will just keep coming. Now, that is something everyone could get behind. All Genghis Khan had to do now was pay off on it. And so he did. He led them through invasion after invasion, becoming one of the world's most mighty empires, capturing 12 million square miles in an area roughly the size of Africa. And how did Genghis Khan do this? Again, it's a long and complicated tale, but in our conversation, Ben highlighted a few key decisions that really made a difference. And here's the first.
He got rid of the traditional royal hierarchy that existed in all these societies at the time, and he made it very meritocratic.
This meant many things. He assigned responsibilities to people based on ability, not kinship. He abolished aristocratic titles and eliminated the caste hierarchy. It didn't matter if you were a shepherd or a camel boy, you could rise to become a general. And he capped his own family's access to the throne. He actually made it a capital offense for his own family members to become a leader without actually being elected to the post. And what was the result of this? Well, here's one.
The remarkable thing about the meritocracy was that it enabled him to deploy whole new fighting strategies that his enemies really never could deal with.
You wouldn't expect this to be the result of eliminating hierarchy, but yeah, creative warring strategies. For example, other armies were divided up into jobs. You had cavalry, infantry, supply. That meant the army had to move in a certain way and set up in a certain way. It was a predictable formation. But Genghis Khan flattened this all out. Everyone in his army was cavalry. They moved on horse and carried their own supplies. And this meant that they could come at their enemies from different angles. They could swarm and surprise them. And it led to great recurring success. Now, you may remember from the beginning of this episode where Ben said that Genghis Khan was particularly excellent at inclusion. How was this possible for a guy who went around conquering lands? Well, the answer is that he did execute the aristocracy of any place that he conquered. That way, they couldn't rise up against him. But after that,
he was able to incorporate people from other tribes, which was like pretty unheard of at the time, into his fighting force. And then later, he would get the most talented people from China, from Turkey, from other places that he went to. And the key to it was when they came over, they weren't, okay, there's that oddball Chinese guy who we conquered, They were first-class citizens, so much so that he would adopt the orphan children of the conquered people into his own family.
And these conquered people knew exactly what they were getting because Genghis Khan was remarkably consistent in his expectations. He expected the same thing of his soldiers as he did of the enemy soldiers. For example, he believed that no soldier should ever turn against their Khan. One time, when he invaded a land, some soldiers from the opposing side decided to betray their Khan and turn him over to Genghis. They figured that it was a survival strategy, basically. But that violated his rule. Even though they just handed him a victory, Genghis executed those soldiers, and then he executed their Khan. And this is an important point, Ben says, because what Genghis Khan was doing was elevating loyalty to a higher principle. This wasn't an issue of following a rule because it's his rule. It was following a principle because that's what's infused into the organization. People don't like rules, but they do like philosophies. They want to be a part of something that they identify with, something that they feel they can carry forward and even spread themselves. So how does all of this apply to companies today? Ben says it's really about truly making inclusion and mission part of your culture, rather than just something that you talk about. Genghis arranged the Mongol way of life around his philosophies, but most companies today don't. And he offers a great example.
Years ago, I was speaking with my friend Steve Stout, and he's saying to me, he's like, Ben, yeah, I used to be president of Sony Urban Music. I'm like, yeah, Steve, I know that. And he's like, yeah, but like, do you understand what that means? I wasn't actually president of Sony Urban Music. I was president of Sony Black Music. But that would have been too racist to say that. So we had to call it Urban Music. And I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. And he says, no, that's not really the problem. The problem is because we called it Urban Music, I was only allowed to market in cities and urban areas. Like there's no Black people living in rural areas. And I was like, wow, that's really kind of stupid. And he goes, no, you're not even listening at all to me, Ben. Here's what I'm saying. I was Sony Urban Music. I had Michael Jackson. What white people don't like Michael Jackson? It's not Black music. It's music. Like we were restricting the whole thing based on like a stupid distinction. And the way people in corporate America do inclusion is they have like a head of diversity, and that's really the head of urban talent or whatever talent, some other kind of talent. It's not talent, it's diverse talent. And they go through a separate process. And that process, just the act of having a different process is very culturally corrupting because nobody can unsee that. You know, everybody comes in through a different process, where the right thing to do is be able to recognize different kinds of talent as talent. And that involves every manager understanding like how different talent might look, which is why like I think Genghis Khan's approach was so powerful and important. It's not just can you get 87 women and 22 African Americans or whatever the numbers you need are to like look good in the New York Times. The more important thing is that when those people get to your company, are they maximally effective and can they do what they were born to do because you can recognize it. And that's what so many companies lose through the way they do it.
At the beginning, we talked about how Ben once tried to lead by example, but discovered that that just doesn't scale. He realized that culture is not one thing or one action or one person. It is a deep and meaningful vision and belief transformed into systems and principles. And here's where folks like Toussaint Louverture and Genghis Khan are interesting models. It's not like there's a one-to-one relationship between their actions and companies today. I mean, obviously, their worlds were way more complicated than that. But when you look at how an organization succeeds, you can see how key decisions that a leader made along the way, not just to win the moment, but to keep everyone focused and working towards a longer-term goal, that those are what matter. Those consistent, thoughtful decisions through every level of an organization, that cohesiveness, that vision, that is what a culture is. That's how to build it. It's not one thing. It's not one small thing or one department or one decision or one ping pong table. Culture is everything. And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Problem Solvers wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Monday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And hey, be kind. Pass the show along to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost. And did you solve a problem that would be good for this show? Let me know about it. Visit my website, jasonfeifer.com, JasonFeifer.com, where you can find my contact information and all sorts of other valuable info. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for all your entrepreneurship needs. And even better, subscribe to our magazine, which is just full of the smartest entrepreneurs solving the toughest problems. My name is Jason Feifer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Thanks for listening. And hey, let's go solve some problems.